know somebody in your life who you would consider to be like the ultimate host or the ultimate hostess? There is this one lady I have known for a very long time. She knew me when I was just a little kid, probably in either late elementary school, early middle school. And we used to joke that she was like, you know, like the second coming of Martha Stewart kind of thing. And she was always able to throw together these incredible parties, be able to cook incredible dishes. I went backpacking one time with her husband and a few other guys. She sent him backpacking with things to make pizza on the fire. I mean, it's just like, what? And so, you know, there are some people in our lives like that. Maybe you're like that. Maybe you're the type of person that doesn't matter, you know, what day of the week it is, what time of the day, no matter how many people show up at your house, man, you can just whip out a spread and ready to go. Or maybe think about who are you, what type of person are you at events and parties? Are you that person that likes to work the room? You know, you want to make sure you talk to everybody. You want to see everybody that's at the party, at the event, get a touch, get a chance to be able to see and talk with everybody. Or are you the person that, you know, as soon as you walk in, you want to do something? You go and find the person in charge, and you always say things like, you know, is there anything I can do? What can I put out? Can I make something? Can I do this? It's like you just have to do something. Well, today we're going to see these two sisters. I kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier. We're going to see these two different sisters that are kind of were tuned in these two different ways. And we're going to learn a little bit from their experience with Jesus in this situation and in these in their interactings with Jesus because of their personalities. And the truth is, I think all of us are kind of tuned in one of these two different ways. And so if you have your Bibles, you want to go there, we're going to be in Luke chapter 10 in just a little bit. If you don't remember, we're also doing this thing called a deeper dive every week that gets emailed out to everybody in our email list. And we also put it on our Facebook page, and then later on it jumps onto our YouTube channel. It's a chance for us to kind of dig in a little bit more to some different passages and different sections that maybe we didn't get to cover here on Sunday mornings. Another way for you to kind of be learning and growing, so be sure you're checking that out. But we're going to pick up in Luke chapter 10 in verse 38. This is what it says. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him, this is Jesus, she came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Now let's kind of stop right there before we go any further in this situation. Here we have these two different sisters, these two different ladies here. And this family is going to actually become somewhat famous, I guess you could say, in the account of Jesus' life and ministry. They're going to pop up again later on. It's recorded in John 11 when their brother Lazarus is going to be introduced to the text there. And we'll even see him again in the following chapter in John chapter 12. But it's interesting because in John 11, they refer to Lazarus as the one that Jesus loves. The situation that happens there, maybe you remember about it. Lazarus gets sick. He dies. Jesus goes to their home. He comforts their sisters. He's moved emotionally to tears himself. Then he raises Lazarus from the dead. And so it seems that this is the first time that Jesus connects with them, but it's going to start what seems to be a pretty meaningful and strong relationship between him and his family. But the focus of this situation is on the two sisters at first. And it's funny how different these sisters are. I don't know if you have siblings or not, but it's interesting how different siblings can be. You know, they can be raised by the same parents in the same manner, the same situation, same type of parenting, all that stuff, but then turn out just so different. I have an older brother. He's 4 years older than me. If I showed you a picture, I should have had a picture of him this morning. Man, I can't believe I didn't have that. If I showed you a picture of him, you probably wouldn't even know that he was my brother. We look very different. We both have the Thompson ears and hairline. But other than that, you know, we look very different. We have different kind of interests, but we also have some of the very real big similarities, common interests and things like that. But in so many ways, we are so different. I think of my own kids. Allie is a lot like me, personality-wise. Brennan is a lot like Beth. And even though they are so similar about certain things and in certain ways, they are also so different. And we see the same thing kind of happening here with Mary and Martha, with these two sisters. And I want to kind of point out a couple observations about them as we kind of get into their story and learn some things about them. The first thing is that they both had a love for Jesus. Both of them loved Jesus. When their brother, later on, like I said, when he gets sick before he dies, they right away, they know who they need to call on. It's recorded in John 11:3. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." You see, there was obviously some kind of connection that was between Jesus and this family. And they understood that Jesus was more than just a good teacher, but that he had the power to save their brother. When crisis hits your life, who do you usually turn to? Is there someone in your life that you often turn to? You know, for me, a lot of times when something's weighing me down, if I'm struggling with something, a lot of times I'll go to Beth, maybe try and talk things through with her. I go to my parents still in that way. A lot of times I'll call up my mom, call up my dad and say, "Hey, I want to talk through something with you. I want to kind of bounce something off of you." Maybe you have some close friends. Maybe you have some people within your church family, maybe within your life group that you kind of work through things with it. And it's important to have these kind of relationships, have these people in our life that we can kind of work through these things and then we turn to when there's something that happens. But for Mary and Martha, it was Jesus. He was the one that they went to when this crisis hits. And even in this situation here at their home, they're kind of going to Jesus, but in different ways. You see, they displayed their love for Jesus differently. And these sisters, they're so different in their personalities and how they display this love for Jesus. For Martha, it was all about hospitality. In fact, the name Martha means lady of the house. You see, Jesus, he wasn't traveling alone. Oftentimes we think that Jesus, you know, we kind of get in our mind with situations like this when it only refers to Jesus and maybe a couple others. A lot of times in our mind, we only picture him and just them. But at this point in time, probably, there was a big crowd that was with him. We don't know exactly how many. But the point is that he wasn't alone, and he gets invited to this family's house by this lady who is just all about hospitality. Even later on in John 12 that I mentioned earlier, she throws another dinner party for Jesus. And see, her ministry for Jesus was shown in this way. Her love for Jesus was shown in this way of ministry, of doing things. And maybe you're like that. Maybe one of the ways that you show your love for God, your love for Jesus, is by serving him or by serving other people or serving within the church. And doing and serving is one of the ways that we worship. But for Mary, though, on the other side of the coin, she was said to be sitting at the Lord's feet. Now, this is an expression. I don't know that she was literally sitting at his feet. I kind of hope not. In those days, you know, they didn't wear shoes and their feet probably stunk and stuff like that. But at any rate, what it means was that she was there listening and learning from Jesus. This was a term that kind of was used a lot of times between a teacher and a student and instructor. We even actually saw this, you may remember, a few weeks ago when we were looking at the situation with the man who was possessed by a demon. It said that when the people came out to see what was going on after he had been healed, after the demon had been cast out, that he was sitting at the feet of Jesus in his right mind clothed. And the idea was probably not so much that he was, you know, sitting there like a dog or whatever at Jesus' feet, but more that he was listening to Jesus, his teaching, and being instructed. But Mary is not a service-oriented person, at least not in this situation, it seems like. It seems like for her, her worship is more oriented around stopping and being with Jesus and kind of expressing herself in an emotional and in a personal way. Even later on in that dinner party, that later on in John 12 that I mentioned a couple times, even there she shows up to that dinner party and she anoints Jesus with perfume and is weeping over him. She shows her love to Jesus in a different way. But I want you to stop for a second and I want you to think and I want you to ask yourself, who are you in this situation? You know, in the situation of Mary and Martha, who are you for this? Are you a person who is a doer? Are you a pauser and sitting at Jesus' feet to worship in that way? When I look at this situation, I have to admit that I'm a bit of a Martha. I'm a doer. Sure, I have my lazy days and my lazy times of the day and things like that. I like to take a break at different times, but for the most part, I like to be doing things. I drive Beth crazy on vacations. You know, for me, a vacation is not like go and rest. You know, I always say, look, I can take a nap at home. I'm not paying money to go and take a nap somewhere. I'm going to go and I'm going to do, man. Let's go see everything. Let's do everything. Let's just go, go, go. Whereas for her, there's been times on vacations. I see some elbow jabs going on in the room, around the room and stuff like that. There have been times on vacations that she's like forced me and she says, look, we need to have a day where we do nothing today. I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm going nuts in the hotel room or whatever, or maybe out on the beach and just sitting still. There was a period of time that I was between jobs for like 9 months. I didn't have a job. I kind of had some side jobs trying to make ends meet while I was trying to find another ministry. And I got to tell you that during that 9 months, it was not good for my attitude. And it was probably not very good for my marriage because of my attitude during that time where I was kind of still and I wasn't doing stuff. I get frustrated. I get anxious. I kind of get things like that when I can't be the one engaged in doing or setting things how they should be, or at least how I think they should be. I want to step in. I want to take care. I want to do something. I find that my worship of God is naturally displayed in what I'm doing. And maybe that's how it is for you, or maybe you're like more like Mary. Maybe you find your joy. Maybe you find your fulfillment in slowing up and sitting at Jesus' feet, so to speak, and stopping and being in his presence. Maybe worshipful moments. Maybe for you, it's times of praying or reading or journaling or just kind of being still with God. But Jesus actually has something to say to these ladies in this situation that I want us to see. Now in verse 41, "Martha, Martha," Jesus answered, "you are worried and upset about many things." And real quick, when Jesus says, "Martha, Martha," he's not like fussing at her, like, you know, maybe your mom would say your name twice, "Joe, Joe," not like that. When a name is repeated in this way, it's more of like a drawing in, like, "Martha, Martha, pay attention to this. You are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." You know, I've heard a lot of sermons preached on this text at different events, different churches and stuff. And a lot of times it's centered around kind of beating up Martha for doing things and praising Mary for being so perfect and sitting at Jesus' feet. But I think it's kind of unfair with this situation. It's kind of like how we label the Apostle Thomas as Doubting Thomas. Because of one situation where he had doubts about people seeing Jesus risen from the dead, The apostles see this and they tell him, "Hey, we saw Jesus." And Thomas is like, "Now, until I see it for myself and see his wounds, I'm not going to believe it." And because of that, well, he's doubting Thomas. As if no one else has ever doubted in the history of the world, poor Thomas, because this one event is labeled as Doubting Thomas. And here, we kind of label Martha as getting caught up in the wrong things while Mary is just has it all figured out, right? But the truth is, nowhere there in what we just read did Jesus rebuke Martha for working. Maybe at other times even, there were situations where their roles were reversed. Maybe there were times that Mary was the one that was scurrying around trying to get everything in place and get everything ready, and Martha was more relaxed and calm and collected. I don't really know, but the fact is that I would even suggest that throughout the Bible, there's no evidence that should make us think that we shouldn't work, that we shouldn't be active. In fact, in James, in his book, in chapter 2, in verse 14, it says, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead." Or even what Jesus says at the end of a parable in Matthew 7, verse 26, "But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice, does not do these things, does not do something, is like a foolish man who builds a house on the sand. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house and it fell with a great crash." You see, it's interesting because typically when we hear this part of this parable that Jesus teaches about this foolish and wise builder, we think it's all about, you know, this wise builder, his house stood strong because he knew a lot. He learned a lot. Man, he had a strong foundation through what he learned. But in fact, Jesus said, if you don't take what you've learned and put it into practice, if you don't build a strong foundation through doing these things. You see, Martha's issue wasn't that she was doing stuff. She was serving her master. I mean, it was Jesus. What else would you do? That's what I would do. Jesus came to my house, I'd want to do some stuff for him. You see, Martha had made her work more important than Jesus. That was the real issue. It wasn't the fact that she wanted to serve her Lord. It wasn't the fact that she wanted to serve Jesus. It was the fact that she was more focused on that work than she was on Jesus. What did Jesus say? He said, "You are worried and upset about many things, And this is probably the fact that he's probably pointing out that more than just the things that she was doing in that house. He was probably calling her attention to the stuff going on in her heart and in her mind and in her life. You know, maybe it was the perception for her that she had, she was worried about what people would think about her home. All these people are at my home. I gotta make sure that they see that I keep a nice tight ship here and get everything cleaned up and put away so they don't think I'm a slob or whatever. You know, maybe she was worried that if she didn't put together a good enough meal, well, they might not think I'm a very good cook or whatever. I can't provide for my family. Maybe she was worried that she wouldn't be considered spiritual enough if she didn't have, you know, the family Bible sitting out, so she had to go and run and get that. They didn't have family Bibles back then, but you get my point. All these things that she can get worried about. She had been so concerned about what other people think instead of pausing and being concerned about Jesus, about focusing in on him. I mean, he, the God of the universe, was there in her living room. He was right there. You know, years ago I heard it termed in this way. We can't become so consumed with the work of the Lord that we neglect the Lord of the work. What this means is that we can get so focused on and wrapped up in the things that we're doing that we completely forget why we're doing them. We can be serving and serving and serving and forget who we're really serving and why we're really serving. And we can kind of leave Jesus out of the equation altogether. But there's some real dangers in there that I want to point out to us about leaving Jesus out of our service and the things that we do in our life. The first thing is that we can begin to feel like we're just, it's never enough. We get this idea that it's just never enough. And when we do this, we're focused completely on ourselves. We think if we can just bury our head into whatever the issue is, whatever the work is, whatever the service is, no matter how hard it is, we could just keep on working. But the problem is that we know no matter how much we do, we still feel like it's just never enough. We can never do enough. We can never have enough. We can never be enough. And I think the reason that happens is that we kind of work with a sliding scale when we're focused inward like in that way. What I mean is that we accomplish, you know, things here and there. And for our standard, you know, maybe we kind of begin to feel like we're doing enough and we feel like we're getting enough accomplished and we're arriving at certain things. But then as we get closer to that mark in our life, well, then it feels like that mark moves a little bit more. Well, I need to do a little bit more and then a little bit more. And then we quickly can find ourselves in this pursuit, this constant pursuit of, I haven't done enough yet for God. I haven't learned enough. I haven't taught enough. I haven't served. I haven't shared. And this can, you know, cover a wide gamut of our lives. It can be everything from what we know, our knowledge, to our physical condition. Well, I haven't taken care of my body enough. I haven't done this enough. It can be our financial situation. I haven't saved enough. I haven't planned enough. It can even be our spiritual development. Well, I haven't read enough of the Bible. I haven't prayed enough. I haven't memorized it, whatever it might be. Paul writes to his young student Timothy, who maybe was struggling with this same thing, and he says this in 1 Timothy 6. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we could take nothing out of it. You see, sometimes we can get so wrapped up in just feeling like we've got to do so much, we forget about the contentment that God wants to bring into our life. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't grow. I'm not saying we shouldn't develop. But when we become so fixated on ourselves and bettering ourselves, And when we use the standard of ourselves, well, then we're never going to be enough. We're never going to make it. But when Jesus is our standard, we're still going to find we're not enough, okay? But we find our completion and our contentment not in ourselves. We find it in Jesus. That's why Peter wrote to these Christians, and he says in 1 Peter 6, humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. I love that picture of we humble ourselves, God lifts us up. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Friends, when we humbly submit ourselves to Jesus, just as Mary did, that's when we find contentment, not from within. But it's also dangerous to leave Jesus out because we find ourselves in the comparison trap. We find ourselves in this feeling of looking at other people. You know, just as not feeling enough is about focusing in within ourselves and feeling I'm never going to arrive. When we fall into the comparison trap, our focus and our attention is on everybody around us, constantly judging ourselves based on everyone else, whether it's our parenting or our possessions or our jobs or our pay rate or our homes or whatever it might be. And I want you to catch this. I think the biggest problem when we focus on other people is that we typically judge our internal issues based on someone else's external facade. Did you catch that? We usually get so focused on the things that are happening within our heart, within our lives, and we judge those problems internally based on what we see with someone else externally. And we have no clue what's going on in their life. We have no clue of the hardship and the pain and the struggle that they're going through. And we just see this facade and we think, man, they've got it all together. Man, they seem to know what's going on and they don't seem to have any problems. But me, I don't know what the deal is. Why can't I get this life together? I got to confess to you. Many of you know that I like to do woodworking projects and stuff like that. I post pictures of them on Facebook and Instagram. I share those, you know, family and friends like to see them and stuff. But I've learned how to take pictures of the projects I make. I learned how to take, you know, put the projects and the kind of get the lighting right and the angle right to where you don't see the mistakes. You don't see the gaps. You don't see the things that aren't right, the things that don't close properly, that don't fit together well. I've learned how to cover those mistakes. And maybe I do that out of an insecurity. Maybe I want to make sure that people think that I know what I'm doing. I don't have a clue what I'm doing. But we all do this. But the problem is that's how many people live life too. They go through life and they want to try and portray themselves in a certain way, whether it's on social media or even with personal interactions, and they kind of push down and they hide these issues. And friends, whenever we shove those issues down, all we're doing is a disservice to ourselves. A lot of times we see in the books of the New Testament that the different authors, the different writers would write to different people or churches to sort of address issues that were going on within those churches or within those people's lives. And Paul wrote a few different books to, or a few different letters to the church in Corinth. And one of the times he had to write to them because they were calling into question his authenticity as an apostle and as a Christian. And so he actually has to write a letter to them and explain to them, or kind of debunk their objections. And he writes this in 2 Corinthians 10:12. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves when they, and I want you to catch this, when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. Paul says, look, you're using yourselves, you're using each other as a standard to know who is holy and who is God's people and who has it all together. And he says, it's so foolish to use us, to use other people as our standard. And if we turn our minds back to the situation with Mary and Martha again, Martha, she gets all upset at her sister who's not helping, who's not doing all this stuff. And I think this is a perfect example of how we can miss maybe what's going on under the surface. You know, I said that later on, Mary's going to show up at the second dinner party that Martha throws. And when Mary shows up, she's weeping uncontrollably. And she anoints Jesus with this expensive perfume. And it says it fills the whole house with the aroma. And in this moment, it's obvious there that something's going on within Mary's heart. That there is a moment of just brokenness that Mary is struggling through, and it kind of comes out in a physical way. And who knows, but maybe in this situation here that we're looking at here in Luke, maybe this was the start of it. Maybe there was something already going on within Mary's heart, and she just needed to sit and be with her Lord. But the problem was that her sister wanted to judge her on the exterior situations. And she wanted to judge even herself based on the things that she saw outside. And she judges her sibling in this way. And whether or not she knew about the internal issues, the internal turmoil and struggles that Mary had, whether she did or not, she didn't really seem to care about it. Martha was caught up in worrying what people would think. But Mary, she just needed to be with Jesus. And when we pull Jesus out of our life, and when we try to manage and cope without him, we get caught up in just looking over our shoulder at the people around us and wondering what everyone else is thinking and wondering else what everyone else is saying. But there's one other thing I think we can do when we leave Jesus out and we're trying to struggle through these things, is that we miss the point. We miss the point of the things that we're doing. And we talked about this a lot a few weeks ago, and this was the whole focus of our message. Sometimes we can miss the point of why we do some of these different things. If you didn't get to be with us on that week, you can always go back on our website, smithfieldchristian.com, and listen to some of the past or watch some of the past sermons. But we saw how that when we have this feeling of never being enough, you know, I mentioned that we kind of focus inwardly. And when we have this feeling of the comparison game, we get focused on everybody else. But when we miss the point of what we're doing and why we're doing it, all we're doing is we're just focusing on those tasks. It's kind of similar to how the Pharisees, these religious leaders, they totally missed the point of all their religious practices. In fact, Jesus many times gave them a verbal lashing for the way that they would treat other people based on their standards. We read about one of the situations in Matthew 22, in verse 25, Jesus said, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside will also be clean." Now, Jesus is not talking about housekeeping here, okay? We're right on the same page of this, right? We're talking about who we are. Then he says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness." Man, talk about some heavy words that Jesus issues out here against these people. But that's what happens when we get so caught up in doing and doing and doing and doing, and even doing good things. Even doing things that it seems like we're doing for God. But if we make those things that we do the focus, like Martha running around her house, you know, trying to get everything perfect for Jesus and his followers, her visitors, and then we miss the whole point of it. And friends, when we become so focused in on ourselves, when we become so focused on everybody around us, when we become so focused on what we're doing, we're just going to burn ourselves out. We're just going to burn ourselves out. The only solution is what Mary figured out. To take time and sit with Jesus. To take time and sit with him. Sometimes this literally means to sit with Jesus. I was joking with Jim about this earlier. What does that mean? You know, it's like, is Jesus going to be at the church later this week? I can meet him at the shelter or something out back. What does that mean to sit with Jesus? But maybe it means to take some time to pause your week, to stop what you're doing, to get away from the people in your life, get away from the people in your home, and your family, whatever it might be, and to stop and to be with Jesus. You know, to slow up. I've talked with people sometimes about, you know, the struggles in their life, and they feel kind of overwhelmed. They feel like, you know, life is just crashing around me, and no matter what I do, I just can't seem to get where God wants me to be. And sometimes I'll ask them, well, you know, are you spending time with Jesus at all? Or even more poignantly, when was the last time that you spent time just sitting and being with Jesus? And it's different for every single person when it works well for you. I'm a morning person. We're in puppy phase at our house. Oh my goodness, pray for us. You know, like something about a puppy, you know, you love them at one moment, the next moment. But you know, at 6 a.m., I know some of you, I'm going to say 6 a.m. and you're like, oh, that's nothing. I get up. I don't care. Okay. 6 a.m., my puppy wakes me up and he wants to go do his business and I take him out there. I usually get up at 6:30 and it's something about that 30 more minutes, man. Just let me have 30 more minutes. But I go out there and we do his thing and come back in, maybe it's still 6:15, and it's tempting to go lay back down and catch another 15, 30, 45 minutes of sleep. But I think, no, I need to take this time right now before the house kicks into high gear, before the kids get up, before everything gets rolling. I need to use this time right now to sit and be with Jesus. Thankfully, my puppy is still ready to kind of snuggle up with me and take another nap and gives me some time to do that. But I find for me that once I start into the day, once the day gets rolling, man, it's hard to really hit the pause button and slow up. I need to stop at the beginning of the day and spend that time. We have to find those times. Maybe for you, it's at the end of the day. Maybe for you, it's on your lunch break. Maybe for you, it's driving to or driving home from work. I don't know what it might be, but we need to find those times. And I find that when I'm regularly taking time to sit with Jesus, I'm less stressed, I'm less irritable, I find that there's less temptation in my life, and when temptation does come, I find that the Holy Spirit is able to help me stand strong against it. I find more joy, and I find more peace having been with my Lord. Just think for a second about this scene with Mary and Martha. I like to, every once in a while, I'll do a little Google image search for situations like this and kind of look and see. And I found a bunch of different pictures, and this was one of the pictures. I think this is a terrible picture of what it was like. This is nothing. First of all, they were not Americans, okay? Let's just get that out of the way. You know, they didn't look like this at all. But this is just too nice and clean and put together. I picture in my mind Martha with her hair like just all out of whack, you know, and like her clothes all disheveled, and she probably got food slopped on her, and she's just like, you know, about to just lose it. And that's how I feel like my life gets sometimes. I get so kind of just out of whack, all because I haven't stopped, all because I haven't taken that time to slow up and to sit with my Lord. You know, who knows? Maybe if Martha had stopped and spent some time with Jesus, maybe they would have all gotten up together and done this work together, prepared this meal together, gotten the house ready together. Who knows what it might have been? But the point was, she was so concerned and so wrapped up on the things that needed to be done that she was just worn out and ready to snap, even snaps at Jesus. Do you find peace? Do you have times in your life when you slow up and you can find peace? If not, friends, we need to take steps to do that. And I don't mean just releases within our lives. I mean times that we slow up and we spend with Jesus. The only way that we're going to be able to have that personal and that time of release of that stress is if we do it. And so I want to encourage you to slow up and just be with Jesus. Thank you.